Good evening, Vancouver. Welcome back to Canucks After Dark, February 12th, here as always with my co-host Canuck Clay. How are you doing this evening?
I'm doing great. It was a great sports weekend. I know you're over the moon over the Super Bowl.
Yes. Oh, absolutely. It was beautiful. It was a beautiful Sunday. I mean, we wake up, we watch the Canucks battle, take down the Capitals in overtime.
Yep.
Thanks to a lovely giveaway, a gift to the stick of JT Miller. And then we get to see Kyle Shanahan blow a 10-plus point lead for the third time. And we get to see the San Francisco 49ers lose. Yeah. It was a perfect weekend.
It was a
except
good day.
For the if you ignore the Detroit game.
Yeah, exactly. I know we're gonna get to all those, but yeah, no. Oh, I'm doing well. I mentioned to you right before we hit the go live button. It's my 6 month anniversary, if you call it, 6 month to the day, August 12th, where I ruptured my Achilles tendon. And I'm grateful. I say that because I'm grateful for where I am. I'm still not fully recovered, but 6 months, even though I'm turning 50, that's still 1% of my life, man, that I had no leg.
Yeah, it's crazy when you put it into those terms, eh?
It is.
I've been a knock on wood this whole time that I speak. That's my nightmare. Any sort of ACL, Achilles, I said it to you right before we went off, right? Like the Dre Greenlaw for the 49ers yesterday, just like excited to run on the field and he tears his Achilles, right? Like that's my nightmare. It's not because of like the pain or the surgery. It's like, can I miss an entire golf season? Can I miss an entire hockey season? That would be my fear.
I'm with you, but thank you. But overall, I'm doing well. Glad to be here with you. Glad to be talking about a number one team. And I'm going to let you take it for the next minute. I'm going to check my video connection because it's kind of flickering. I'll let you take it for the next minute or so.
Sure.
That's okay.
I will say you look okay to me, but we will. I will say a very interesting week for the Vancouver Canucks. I mean, they come back from the All-Star break. They go on the road, five-game road trip to kick things off. Oh, that is a different camera.
Yeah, not a good one.
Five-game road trip to kick things off. And for the level of, you know, like this feels a lot like when the Canucks went through that slump a couple of months ago and we were like, oh no, like they're falling apart and they still never lost more than two games. I mean, the Canucks are 2-1-1 on this road trip and it feels like they've been bad coming out of the All-Star break. And if this is what bad is for this team, if they can somehow turn that into, you know, in this case, 5 out of a possible 8 and the potential to go 7 of a possible 10 and likely to go 7 of a possible 10 facing off against the Blackhawks tomorrow. I mean, going 700 on a road trip would be absolutely fantastic.
Yeah. And it's funny. I think we joked about saying 3-1-1. I'm pretty sure that was in essence, our predictions. It took a while to get there, but hopefully they're going to get there. Exactly. And it looked a little grim. After the Boston game and after the Detroit game. And by the way, Parker and I, we are men of the people. We've heard some of your feedback. So yeah, we're still going to recap these four games, but we don't have to spend too much time on at least one of them. So our goal is to finish the recaps between 20 and 25 minutes. So we have more than half the second half of the show to talk about other stuff, previews, news, your questions. So thank you for your feedback. We always appreciate getting it for sure.
Yeah. And it's absolutely valid. That's what's nice about it. You know, we're not like, oh man, they always want something, whatever. We're not giving them. No. I mean, to be fair, we do take 30 minutes every episode to recap show or recap games. And we end up not having time for your questions. And I think that's every time we do have time to answer questions, it's one of the most fun parts. So we got four games to recap. However, let's be real. Do we need to talk about the Boston game too much?
No.
Probably not. We can just forget that ever happened. And we can start with Canucks Carolina in an extremely low event return from the All-Star break. A special teams bonanza. Four goals being scored on special teams, starting off with what became, unfortunately, a theme over the past week. An early shorthanded goal against, starting with Martinook. Canucks are on a power play. I will say NHL.com never given me an ad before, but they have started now. I have an ad for, no free promotion. It's a pain reliever.
Yeah.
I just wanted to watch the replay of the Martinook goal.
That's right. Usually you can click on it. It just pops up.
Normally I click on it. It's good to go. And this was just... This was the play where they dump it in deep and it's really Sam Lafferty being lazy. It's his guy to go pressure in the corner. He goes, throws a really weak check, and then lets his man go to the net, puck goes down low. Martinook beats Demko, and just an ugly way to come back from the All-Star break.
Yeah, and Lafferty, I don't want to say that the shine has kind of lost its luster, but remember how good he was when he started? And that was because one of our centers, Bluger or Suter, one of them was hurt. So Lafferty played fourth line C. He was good. He actually scored a few goals, got elevated to Petey's line. But no, he was a healthy scratch in the last two games. So I see that maybe he's falling to his, would you say, rightful place as a 13th, 12th, 13th forward. And that one, yes, did not help at all.
Yeah, and that's what he was acquired as, right? Like Sam Lafferty was, his design was to be a fourth line player slash maybe a 13, right? Maybe a black ace to come right in when a guy goes down. And man, he had a hot start, right? Yeah, that luster is really worn off, especially with the elevation of that third line and how well they've been playing. And honestly, how impressive people like Niels Omon have been, right? Like he hasn't been flashy. He's been absolutely fine. He's been a staple of that fourth line. And at the point where you got to take somebody out, he's been the guy.
Yep. Great point. And at least, yeah, it's funny. We say, oh, bad shorthanded goal, 4 minutes, 4.5 minutes in. But that was actually the best they did over the trip, like in terms of bad starts.
Yeah, which is not a good sign, if we're being honest. Canucks did get one back on the power play. And it's funny when we get to this point in the season, we start seeing like Quinn Hughes with 50 assists and things of the nature.
Yeah.
But we have Elias Lindholm, getting his 10th of the season power play tip in. This is his first game with the Canucks.
It was.
And he gets on the board early. Hughes firing a shot. It's basically going wide. Yeah. And Lindholm pulls it back in.
Yeah. Hughes smart enough to do that on purpose, you think?
I think so. I mean, he's got the accuracy. It's not like he's putting a lot on that shot to try to like get it through everybody.
Yeah.
Especially on the power play, right? The power play the Canucks run, which is usually a bit of an umbrella, right? Like, one guy on the top, two guys high on the sides, and then one guy down low, one guy in front. There's usually not a big lane there, right? The forward's going to, the forward and the defenseman are going to sort of line things up in front of the goalie and block that passing lane or the shot lane, I should say, but you can fire it wide all day long. And look, worst case, you fire it wide and the puck sits behind the net and you have a guy like Lindholm or Besser to go pick that up. Or best case, you have Lindholm pulling it back and through the goaltender.
Good. And the ironic thing is this first goal for him as a Canuck, this was after Kuzmenko had already scored for Calgary earlier in that night.
Yeah, and I didn't know that. So I tweeted out, trade one. And I was wrong. I was wrong for another 20 minutes.
Awesome. That's true. I know. I see what you did there. Very good.
So a dominant first for the Canucks. I mean, shots were 12-4 for Vancouver, but it's just that shorthanded goal leaves such a bad taste in the mouth. Mm-hmm. Second period, Canucks have another power play late in the period when they get the second goal. This is another tip from Elias Lindholm, again off of a Quinn Hughes play. I can't watch highlights anymore. I'm really sad that the ad blocker doesn't work. so I can't really remember this goal. It was like a week ago.
Also deflection, except the first one he was out this way. This one he turned this way. Yeah. So it was good.
Ambidextrous. Yeah. So Lindholm, who had 9 goals in whatever it would have been, 40 plus games, gets 2 goals in his first game with the Canucks. Hughes gets assists on both. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, that lead only lasts about 2 minutes. Canucks go back to the penalty kill for a too many men penalty, which has unfortunately reared its head as of late as well. Sebastian Aho ties it up. So we go to the third, we are tied, and JT Miller. I don't remember this one exactly. Again, I have a 6-second advertisement this time. Okay. Same brand, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Trying to remember the goal. Here we go. And it broke. Besser essentially went, it was a mistake behind the net by the goaltender. Puck sort of went off the stanchion, I guess. Went in, beat Slavin to the puck. It goes to Miller, and he backhands it in with Suter running some interference in front. And the Canucks get a 3-2 lead.
That was right. That was the one where Myers had to wait for Suter and Miller to curve out of the zone. Besser standing there waiting, and then they just all rush in as they see the puck come off the stanchion.
Yeah. And the thing is, this game got scary, right? Carolina outshot the Canucks 12-3 in the third period. The score effects kicked in. The Canucks went back into their one-goal lead, full defense, no offense mode. And it worked out this time. Canucks hang on. Thatcher Demko with a great performance. 2 goals on 24 shots for a 917, which is, was that below what he's at for the year? Yeah, it's below what he's at for the year, wow. Which is a pretty good sign.
That's impressive. What's he at for the year? Like 918?
919 right now. Yeah.
Okay. That's pretty impressive. Very good.
Yeah. If it weren't for that Boston game, it would be a little bit higher.
Yeah. So I wasn't, I thought that was a pretty good first game out of the All-Star break. All-Star break. Yeah, whatever. You might love it. You might hate it. You might be proud that we had 6 Canucks players and a coach there. No one won anything, but that's okay. But it was nice that they came out of the break and they didn't have that, whatever, hangover or lull. I thought it was a good game. It was a good, intense game. Yeah, you're right. Low event game, but maybe because it was relatively intense, actually. I don't know.
Yeah, and I'm curious on the analytics side where the Canucks sort of fall this sort of week, right? They felt like they've been maybe on the negative side of things. The Carolina game, expected goals-wise, I don't want 5-on-5. I want all strengths. Let's pull that up here. Mm-hmm. 47% for the Canucks, so they got slightly outplayed in all situations.
Okay.
They did worse than they did in the Bruins game, technically. the Bruins game was about 51-49 on the expected goals front, but obviously the Canucks couldn't do anything.
Yeah.
And I will just get ahead of myself. The Red Wings game, which they lost, they were at 64% expected goals, so pretty dominant. And then against the Capitals, their win, they were at 44%. So 3 games this week where the Canucks have been outplayed, technically, at least by the analytics standpoint.
Yeah. Okay. So, and it's funny, all these talk about regression. Like, we're 2/3 through the season now. Are we still talking about regression, or might this be who we are?
I mean, it's still a ridiculous level of PDO.
I know.
Right? Like, it's got to stop at some point, but it just isn't. I don't know what the Canucks shooting percentage is at right now, but it's got to be high.
It's got to be high.
Yeah, and I'll see if I can find that if you want to go into the Boston game.
Sure. Okay. And in all seriousness, we should honor it for at least a couple minutes. Honor it from a standpoint of, you know, I've said on my shows, and I'm pretty sure Parker feels the same way, we're over 2011. We have to acknowledge it as a rough spot in our club's history. Like, the closest we've got to a Stanley Cup, well, that and the game 7 against the Rangers. But it's 2024, you guys. It's 13 years later. And there's only one player left from that series, and that's Brad Marchand. So we want the Canucks to win because it was the number one team against the number two team, not because we're trying to exorcise demons from 13 years ago. But I don't care what motivation, Parker, you have. It's inexcusable. It's inexcusable to give up a goal 32 seconds in. It's even double inexcusable when it's a shorty. It's triple inexcusable when it's Brad Marchand. And it's quadruple inexcusable when they get another shorty before the period ends. Like, oh.
Yeah, this game, and I'll just go back. Canucks are at 13.2% shooting percentage when the league averages around 10. So obviously that's nice. This game, this was an interesting one because, of course, it was about Thursday night at 4 o'clock. And I finish work and I sit down and I hear Shorthouse say the two like titans of the NHL, first in the West versus first in the East. And I'm sitting there and I'm like, this doesn't make sense. Like, how did we get here? Right. Like, this Canucks team obviously wasn't supposed to be where they are right now.
Yeah.
And I sit there and I'm like, what a good day. Like, the Canucks they're first in the league.
Mm-hmm.
Like, no one expected this. And we're talking about after the last few years, how, you know, this game is the clash of the Titans, the class of the NHL. And then, man, what a way to just ruin it. Right. I mean the shorthanded goal 30 seconds in, and then another shorthanded goal about 15 and a half minutes in, and this game's over, right? We go to the second period. They score twice in 15 seconds in the first minute, and it's over. And I promise you, I did not watch another minute of this game.
Wow. Well, I got two things to say. The first one is, if you take away, I know it's so simple to say this, but if you take away the 4 goals, you kind of said it. The Canucks actually dominated, but the Canucks actually, because I did watch the game, outplayed Boston for large portions of it, but your score effects that we always talk about. They're up 4-0, 21 minutes in the game. They're not going to win like 12-0. So naturally, the Canucks, if they have any pride, they should have some pushback. I'm glad you didn't watch it, because I watched it with a friend. We were at the Shark Club downtown, had a nice little private corner, but very aggravating, my friend. Very aggravating.
Yeah, no, I literally, after that fourth goal, minute of the second period, I think I tweeted out, I found the solution for this game, and it was a picture of the power button on my remote. And then I went and got a burrito. And then I got home, and I think the Canucks were on the power play.
Yeah.
And I turned the game back on.
Yeah.
And then I just kind of did other stuff. I just didn't really pay attention to it the rest of the way. Because I just seeing 4-0 on the scoreboard against Boston. I just didn't want that on my Thursday night. And so I decided against it.
And if you lose 4-0 and you're -4, guess what? You're on the ice for all 4 goals. That was Lindholm and Petey.
It's tough. I mean, that's what happens when you're on power play one. You allow 2 short handed goals in the first period. I mean, you're gonna be on the hook for those.
Yeah. All right. Before we go to the next game, I'll give you a 30-second story. You might not care, but these people want me to address it. The night before on my stream, Ice Rink Insights, one of the person, he typed into his comment. He goes, "Canucks versus Bruins, big game or whatever," and then it basically read, "Big game, Tom," as in tomorrow, Marchand's gonna score. But I read Canucks versus Bruins, big game, Tom Marchand gonna score. So that's why Tom Marchand's knows, Tom Marchand's junior coach, Tom Marchand's like, they're all in the chat tonight, just so you know.
Yeah, I think I saw that on your Twitter.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. Correctly. So there we go. Welcome everyone, Tom Marchand's family. Happy to have you here.
So then we get into sports weekend, and I wake up Saturday morning, and I think it was like 8:00, and it was like, it is the perfect time to make some breakfast, have a coffee.
Yeah.
Canucks Red Wings. And then I'm thinking, like, I'm going to watch this game. I think I had my own hockey game that afternoon at like 2:15. So it was perfect. And then the following day, it's like, hey, we got Canucks game and then the Super Bowl. And what I ended up watching, of course, was the final round of the Waste Management Open, where Nick Taylor won that. So Saturday morning, unfortunately, if you look at the recap, you'll notice a bit of a trend. You'll notice that last game, actually, let's go back 2 games. Carolina scores in the first 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Then the Bruins score in the first minute.
Yeah.
And then the Detroit Red Wings also score in the first minute. And once again, it is just lazy play in the Canucks own zone. Like, they didn't show up for this one. They weren't ready to play. And Lucas Raymond, 45 seconds in, and the Canucks are behind the 8-ball early.
Yeah, Ted Myers just let him go around him. Doesn't check him. Doesn't take the puck. Doesn't do anything.
Yeah, that was really bad defending by Tyler Myers. To be the largest man on the ice, pretty much, right? 6'7", 6'8". I don't know what the official number is. On skates, you can make it 6'10", at that point, right? Get in the guy's way. That's your one job.
Yeah.
You're allowed to do that in beer league. You can get in the guy's way. They won't call a penalty. Just stand in the guy's way. Don't let him through, and he can't do anything. But Myers just gets burned to the outside, and then DeSmith sort of comes out and challenges a little bit. Raymond beats him around the corner, because I don't think Casey DeSmith expected Tyler Myers to just let him through.
Yeah.
He's probably like, oh, this guy's going to be stuck on this side of the ice. I'm going to come out to challenge.
Yeah.
This was a little bit of vintage Tyler Myers, unfortunately.
Yeah, somehow Raymond gets past Myers and gets past DeSmith, who's basically stuck on one of the posts.
Yeah.
Not great.
Not great. So first period's pretty even. Other than that goal, nothing else happens. We go out in the second period, and keep in mind, this game, some new look lines after the loss to Boston, right? We have Hoglander playing with Pettersson and Suter.
Good point.
And this works out a minute in. We have a Hronek shot from the point. Pettersson gets a second assist. Nils Hoglander tips it in. Hoglander has been so good. And I think we talked about this last week, how I was thinking, like, I don't see him getting into a top six role just because it hasn't worked so far. He's been so, so good in the bottom six.
Yeah.
This week, I think Hoglander's shown that he's not going anywhere.
I agree. And Hronek, a really good wisdom, intelligence, hockey IQ. That's what I'm looking for. Made him sound like a 50-year-old man. He usually whips the puck 100 miles an hour, sometimes hits the net, sometimes hits opposing players, sometimes misses the net. But that one, he obviously took at least 30 miles an hour off of it. Nice slap pass so Hoglander could put his stick down. That was a really nice play.
Yep. And then Hronek's rewarded about 10 minutes later He takes a shot that goes through for his fourth of the season. Only four for a guy who's probably broken six legs, it seems like, with his shot. And then a couple minutes after that, Elias Pettersson gets his 28th of the year. And just like that, I mean, what a second period, right? The Canucks, we had this narrative for a good chunk of the season that, you know, this team excelled in second periods, and they absolutely showed that here. Unfortunately, it didn't make it all the way through the third.
Yeah, and what's our, we already know that we lose this game. Is it true that we've captured 60 of 62 points when we're leading going into the third?
I think correct? So, like 25-0-2 or something along those lines.
Whatever it
maybe
is now,
maybe it's 50 out of 52, something like that.
Yeah, okay.
Maybe 27-0-2, I don't know, somewhere around there.
And, you know, as I'm watching, it's not even a meltdown. It wasn't brutal. It wasn't like Boston. But I can't forget that Detroit's, they're right there. They're right there fighting for third place in the Atlantic. So they're a good team. They're 8-9 games over 500 right now.
Yeah, they're also a very high shooting percentage team. They're second in the league, 12.1%.
Oh.
They just really haven't had the goaltending to back it up, right? Alex Lyon's been better. But yeah, this one was weird because the third period, kind of the whole way, I felt like Detroit was going to pull back, but it also didn't feel like the Canucks were playing terribly. Like it didn't feel like, oh, Detroit's going to outshoot the Canucks 16-6 in the third period. And it's either the goaltending holds up or it doesn't. Right. Sprong scores on the power play and then Rasmussen ties it up with a tip in about 8 minutes into the period. The rest of the way, it was pretty even, pretty back and forth. Nothing, you know, too dramatic. Until, of course, we get to overtime.
Yep. Get to overtime. And, so this one, it's Pete. Okay, so I remember this play. Let's backtrack for a second. Did you notice that Lucas Raymond, you know how, I guess we didn't even talk about how Zadorov knocked him out. Well, I took that penalty, I should say.
Yeah.
Didn't knock him out. Yeah. And Raymond flopped a little bit. I'm not sure what you thought about that. But then Raymond came back. But then I remember at least three other times where Raymond got crunched or it looked like he got crunched. He's really good at selling it, doing the thing where he looks up to see the ref's going to call it. And then, magically he's up again. So,
yeah.
PD chased Raymond.
Stutzel in him.
Yeah. That's fair. PD chased Raymond behind the net. And I was fine with that play because PD is aggressive enough. He's smart. And I think he knew that Raymond was kind of having an off night, even though he scored that first goal. And then Lindholm kind of got stuck in no man's land because he's like, should I help PD and create a 2-on-1? Or maybe PD doesn't win this battle. And then I don't know what Hughes was doing, letting Wallman get past him.
That one was weird because it's not like you're a minute into OT and you're tired, right? I mean, this was 15 to 20 seconds in overtime.
Sure.
I feel like he should have just been able to catch him. Right? Like, don't let him get that step on you and catch up to him.
Yep.
But instead, he lets Wallman by. Wallman gets through. He cross checks him in the back and gets called for a penalty shot.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What'd you think of the penalty shot? I don't even know who this guy was.
Wallman? I mean, he goes in. It's a nice goal. It's a nice shot. Just straight up beats DeSmith. And then he hits the gritty. And
what'd you think?
For a second, I was upset. And then for a second, I said, you know what? That's pretty cool. my initial reaction was like, I am mad that you have done this. And then immediately after, I was like, could you imagine if Nils Höglander scored a penalty shot and then pulled that off? That would be the coolest thing of all time. And so I have to just like, you know what? Fine. I'll turn the TV off. I respect it. You win. Whatever.
Yeah. And it's not like the gritty is slapping a puck into the empty net with 1 second
right.
left.
That's egregious. Should never do that.
Never.
How dare you hurt the empty net? We'll get to that. We'll talk about that more later.
The 75% of Leafs fans in Ottawa. Yes. Okay.
So the Canucks lose that game. But again, at this point, they're 1-1-1 on the road trip. And then they have quick turnaround. Capitals had a quicker turnaround. They played at like noon on the Saturday while the Canucks played at 10. 10:30 a.m. start on Sunday. Perfect scheduling. You have a game that'll end around 1. And then you have the Super Bowl at 3:30.
Yeah.
Canucks Capitals, we got to go quick because we said we'd go faster on the recaps and we haven't at all. You have Canucks legend Nick Dowd scoring a minute in again. This
bad
time
play
at least was a minute eight, so it was a little better.
Yep. Cole just doesn't notice that there's a guy skating behind him.
Ian Cole was bad yesterday.
Yes,
it wasn't just this goal all around. He didn't have a good game. 800th career game, did not have it. However, you have Connor Garland going in, tying things up. Really nice shot over the pad, under the glove. Well placed. Shout out Noah Juulsen for this game, by the way, right?
I agree.
He gets his fourth assist of the year on this goal, right? Not like he's doing anything on the score sheet. but he was really good in this game. And he's been really good as of late. He has played his way from being someone who shouldn't have been in the lineup over Mark Friedman, in my opinion, to proving me so, so wrong because he has gotten six times better. And has been, he's the fourth best defenseman on this Canucks team right now.
Sorry, that was pretty funny. Because I'm just going to say, with Susie and Zadorov out, he's number five. But yeah, he's probably playing better than Myers, I presume you're going to say, or Cole?
Both.
So he's number three.
Well, yeah, number three currently. And then he's ahead of Susie.
Yeah.
But like, is he ahead of Zadorov? Or no, sorry. No, he's not ahead of Susie. He's behind Susie, but he's probably ahead of Zadorov the way he's playing right now. Like, I think he's genuinely number four on this team.
I agree with you. Juulsen, he knows that he's actually not the worst defenseman because Mark Friedman had to come in because of Zadorov's game one suspension. So I agree with you. He only played 15 minutes, but they were solid 15 minutes, including that really good first pass on that goal. Absolutely. Very good.
Yep. Second period, Ovechkin gets one that he didn't really deserve. I mean, he fired it across to Oshie and it hit a skate and went in. Unlucky. Nils Höglander, unbelievable goal. I mean, Pettersson gives him a little drop pass. He goes down the right wing. He looks like he's, you know, either going to drive the net or try to pass it back door. Instead, just goes quickly to the backhand. It goes shelf over the shoulder. Unbelievable goal from Höglander, and really just cementing his spot. Like, he's got all the skill to be there. And that's enough to tie it up in the second period. Third period, remarkably uneventful, as far as I remember.
Yep.
And then we got overtime. And again, pretty unremarkable overtime, very possession-based, as we're used to. I mean, six shots in the entire 5 minutes of OT. And then what a beautiful giveaway. A little backhand pass, blind in your own zone. Again, like 7 seconds left in overtime when that pass is made. It's not like you're going down to score a goal, right? If you're Washington, you don't have the time to. There's no reason to make a risky pass like that. They put it right onto the tape of JT Miller. Perfect shot, far corner upstairs with like, what was it, 4.8 seconds to go to win this game.
Michael's a good player. He's smart. Do you think Miller like beaver-tailed, or do you think he said, hey, like
he had some pressure on him, right? I think one of the forwards was there to give him
Petey came around.
Yeah, it was Pettersson. Yeah, he gave him some pressure and got him to give it up. But yeah, you can't be playing the puck to the middle of your own ice that late in overtime. There's and it's no weird benefit.
Yes. And as good as the Canucks have played this year, I still, and I'm not a doomsday guy, but that's a kind of play that the Canucks would make, right? Usually. So it was nice to be on the receiving end of it. The very fortuitous, but I loved it and sent us all in a good mood to the Super Bowl Sunday for sure.
Yeah. And I was very much expecting to lose this game in a shootout.
Yeah.
Like it just had that feeling all day. And for that puck to get there, and I just sort of like did one of these, like I was like, oh, are we going to, and then he just scored and that was it. And it was perfect. So 2-1-1 so far on this road trip.
Yep.
In what has felt like, I mean, you think about these games, right? You beat Washington at OT, you squeak by Carolina, you lay an absolute egg against Boston, and you lose to Detroit. Like, it feels like it's been a pretty bad road trip.
Yeah.
2-1-1. Totally fine. You go out to Chicago tomorrow, a team that you should beat, you know, right now about 7, 8 out of 10 times. You go do that. I mean, it's a 3-1-1 road trip, and you never have to play on the East Coast again the rest of the season.
Is that it? We don't go back?
No more Eastern time games, if I remember correctly.
Okay, that's good. That's
and
good.
Hopefully no more matinee games. Is there one on Family Day? Isn't there? Oh, are you kidding me?
At least we don't have to fight over scheduling it for game over. Oops. No.
Minnesota. Oh, that's going to be so boring.
Well, look at us. We finish our game recaps before 10:30. Yeah. Do you mind if I acknowledge a couple generous people real quick?
Absolutely.
All right. So, yes, some of you are new. You're wondering, why don't we acknowledge the chat? Immediately, Parker and I, we get tunnel vision. You guys should consider yourself lucky. We usually go to about 10:40. So we finished by 10:30. Now we're going to talk about other stuff and acknowledge more comments. But we want to acknowledge Justin, Thank you for being a member for 19 months. Terry, I don't know how we missed this, or maybe you saw it. I admittedly missed it. Thank you, Fangirl, for pointing this out. $20 donation for Terry Kim. Thank you, Terry. Canucks need 10 wins out of the remaining 29 to make playoffs. Yeah, if you want to go with the 92 or 94 point, they're in. Thank you, Terry. You're awesome. Carol, a member for 18 months. Thank you. And then we have a new member in Maggie May. So thanks to all of you for going over and above with your generosity. We appreciate it.
Thank you very much. Let's go over to The Athletic to see their current predictions. Right now, the Vancouver Canucks are projected to finish with 112 points, win the President's Trophy by 3 points in their projections. Boston and Dallas both at 109.
Wow.
And how about 71% chance to win the Pacific Division as of right now, which should pretty firmly win them the conference as well. I mean, Winnipeg, Dallas, Colorado all sort of fighting each other for the top of the Central. Winning the conference is so big here, right? It puts you against most likely like Calgary or Nashville in that first round, which would just be fantastic.
71. What did you, forgive me if you told me, did they give the cup percentage? Like, is it 8 now or is it?
Cup's only 5.
Huh?
Meanwhile, you have Edmonton at 14, Dallas at 13, Carolina at 13, Florida at 11, Boston at 9, Winnipeg at 8, all above the Canucks.
So they have us win 71% Pacific, but yet they have Edmonton with 3 times the odds to win the cup that we do.
Yeah. And you know what? I mean, the Canucks do have a nice little lead on the Pacific.
Yeah.
I mean, they don't have much playoff experience, I think is probably adding to that. But I don't know. I mean, I think betting markets are about 12-1 right now on the Canucks, which would be what? 8%, 8.5%, which is higher than this model. I mean, it's one model, right? I'm sure MoneyPuck has them higher because they value this current year a lot higher. Not that it matters for anything. It's just fun to look at.
Oh man. Okay. I wonder. Yeah.
But hey, 1 in 20 chance.
20.
I'll take it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I know someone mentioned, Terry with his donation mentioned that the Canucks are only 10 wins away. Yeah, I've actually heard some projections. Actually, maybe you can, if you still have it up on your screen, Parker, I've heard some projections as you could get in the playoffs with the 8th spot as 90 or 91 points. I've heard that from someone.
Yeah, so right now, looking at the projections, I mean, there's like 7 teams in the West that are pretty much guaranteed in, right?
Okay.
Dallas, Winnipeg, Colorado in the Central.
Yeah.
Vancouver, Edmonton, Vegas, LA in the Pacific.
Yeah.
That leaves Nashville and Calgary mostly fighting for that 8 seed with a little bit of Minnesota, St. Louis, and Seattle.
Right.
They're projecting right now Calgary 36% chance, Nashville 33% chance. They're projected to get 91 and 90 points respectively.
Okay.
Minnesota and St. Louis both projected to get 87 at 16 and 15%.
Yeah.
Seattle at 86 points, 11% chance. So yeah, in theory, 91, 92 might get you there really on both sides of the aisle, right? In the East, it's kind of similar too, right? You have Boston, Florida, Toronto, Tampa Bay, Carolina, Rangers, and then you have 2 spots left for Detroit, Pittsburgh, Philly, New Jersey, Islanders, all of them sort of in the mix.
Wow. And thank you, Viper, for acknowledging your membership for a month. Parker, explain to me one thing. I heard you say that the Kings are included in the 7 that are locks or expect to make it, but right now they're tied with St. Louis, 2 games in hand, but are the betting markets all still saying that LA is way better than they're performing right now?
So The Athletic has LA at an 89% chance to make the playoffs.
Oh, wow.
Based on a projection of 98 points compared to St. Louis's 87.
Okay. Okay.
Which is a pretty big jump. Yep. Money Puck has LA at 92% to St. Louis's 26.
Yeah.
And those are the only ones that I have in front of me.
Okay. Thank you. Just curious. Yeah. LA, remember there are times at the start of the year where we were worried about not the Oilers, but we were about Vegas and LA, not Vegas and Oilers. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. The Oilers have gone on a crazy run.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. For sure. And LA's,
they've only made up a handful of points in the Canucks during that whole time.
It's crazy. And I know a lot of people on X were typing that, but it's true. Like when they won their 16 in a row, The Canucks were 13-1-2 in that. So they only gained 3 or 4 points by winning 16 in a row. And it's a fact. It's not, we're not making fun. We're not throwing shade. And then, but Edmonton, well, I guess Vancouver fans could be like this too. I'm finding that Oilers fans are pretty nasty on X as well.
I don't really pay attention to Oilers fans, to be honest. I'm pretty liberal with my mute button on Twitter. I will not lie.
Yeah. Not afraid. Yeah.
No, I don't need to see stuff I don't want to see. That's fine. I can
see. That's why you're always so calm. You don't worry about stuff like that. That's good.
Yeah.
Good.
We'll go with that. So where does this leave us? About 25 minutes here on the show. We obviously want to take some questions. I mean, really, we got, how many games do we have to preview? Is it 4 again? It's 1, 2, 3, 4 games to preview. We don't need to spend too much time on that because it's a team that we've already seen in Detroit. It's the Blackhawks who they should beat. It's the Wild who they should beat, and the Jets, which should actually be a fun game on Hockey Day in Canada.
Oh yeah.
What I do want to focus on, though, I want to quickly ask you. I want your take on the Ridly Greig, or however you pronounce his name, because it's not spelled correctly on either end. I want your opinion on taking a slap shot into an empty net from 8 feet away with like 4 seconds to go in a game.
Okay. My opinion, and I'll flat out say, and before anyone calls me out on it, yes, I've never played competitive hockey before. I understand it. I love talking about it. I'm the 49-year-old dad in roller hockey that they put me in front of the net so pucks can bounce off of me. So that is my experience in competitive hockey. If Ridly Greig was on my team, I would discourage that kind of behavior, but it does not justify getting cross-checked in the face. So I was okay with Ridly Greig, with what he, okay, very kind of loosely, not my preference, but I think Morgan Rielly just bumped him, or even plowed him into the boards, or bumped him in the boards, or even fought him, that is way better than a cross-check to the face of an unsuspecting player. I don't care if it's Toronto, Ottawa, Calgary, whoever, put any team in there. I know some people really liked him shooting and they're like, oh, that's fun. Then if you don't like him doing that, then don't let him score or don't be down by one. And I know that was a game in Ottawa where 75% of the fans, it seemed like, were Toronto fans. So I get there's a lot of the emotion. And so I was okay with what he did. I certainly wasn't okay with what Rielly did, but if I had to choose, I don't think I would have done, I wouldn't have condoned what Greig did either, but certainly nothing compared to what Rielly did to him. That's my first reaction.
Yeah. I think, look, if this was done to my team, I would be frustrated.
Yeah.
Especially in the situation the Leafs are in, where they've failed every single year and it feels like the wheels are sort of coming off for them. But for this guy on the Ottawa Senators who aren't going to make the playoffs, yep, right? Rookie, you know, just goes out there. Was this game? This game was in Ottawa, right?
It was.
That's the part to me that takes it from like to me, that's just cool. Like, cause if I'm at home, like if we're at a Canucks game, let's say the Canucks are like just barely pushing for a playoff spot, and the Canucks are against like a high seeded Boston team, and you have Nils Höglander rip a slap shot from 8 feet out to seal it or something like that on an empty net. That would be so cool. That to me, it's honestly like, is it disrespectful? Absolutely. And that's the best part of it. That's the entire point of what he did. It was to say, screw you guys. We just beat you. Get out of here. Go back to your rink. You know, and to me, I think that's great. Now, if I'm the opponent, I obviously think, someone can take a run at him, right? Go, like you said, right? Go just, you know, give him a shot into the boards, right? Try to drop the gloves, whatever. Obviously, what Morgan Rielly did was not acceptable. And I think the hearing is today or tomorrow. Tonight or tomorrow. I think it's tomorrow at this point. So we don't know the actual suspension yet. But it's just a cheap shot. Yeah, you can't do that. Part of me is like, look, maybe you shouldn't let the guy in on a breakaway on the empty net and allow him to score from 8 feet. Oh, he didn't put the puck in the net the way you liked. Like, you know, I just get over it is my opinion. I thought it was great. We need some emotion.
You think six games for Rielly or so? That's what I've been hearing. Five
probably,
or six.
Probably. Yeah. The fact that it was in person hearing, it'll be six and probably not much more. But yeah, I think especially in like a rivalry game, it would have been a little more interesting if Ottawa's like fighting for that same playoff spot. But the fact that they're not, you know, it's not as cool. But you know, I think that's a hardcore move.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it was man, it had everyone talking. It was pretty crazy. It was pretty crazy.
It was way too much of a conversation. Any other two teams, if it was Columbus versus Minnesota and someone did that, like Kirill Marchenko goes in and takes a clapper on the empty net to seal the game, it gets talked about for like one quick little segment on Sportsnet, right?
Yep.
It doesn't get blown up for the entire, the guy probably doesn't get cross-checked in the face by whoever. It's just like, yeah, it's just Toronto being Toronto.
By the way, Carol, thank you. Gifts 5 Canucks After Dark memberships.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay, let's thank do a very quick preview and then we'll go to the people for some questions. So folks, right now while we're here, we got about 20 minutes left in the show. Get your questions in if you have any Q&A for us. We'll talk about these next four games very quickly. Starting tomorrow, 5:30 p.m. Which is a nice start time for us. Canucks, Blackhawks, obviously not good, right? 14-35-3. They are competing with San Jose. They are currently after the 6-game losing streak and the Sharks have won 5 of their last 10. They are pretty comfortably at the bottom of the barrel, top of the Macklin Celebrini sweepstakes. This should be a slaughter.
It should be. It should
be. Scares me.
The last time we played them, it was close, right? Did they beat us?
I don't remember. I have no recollection, but I can tell you very shortly.
Yeah,
Blackhawks, Game Center. It'll tell me the previous scores. Maybe. The Canucks have won both games this year. 4-3 and 2-0.
Okay, so close. Okay. Maybe I don't know what I was thinking then. Oh, St. Louis that we keep losing to, not Chicago. Okay, we're right. Fine. Okay, win. No Bedard. We're going to win.
Yeah, should be a good one. Should be an easy one in theory. 2-day turnaround. Canucks come back home for a little 2-game homestand. They get the Red Wings, a little bit of spirit. Zadorov comes back for this game. obviously, coming back after that 4-3 overtime loss. Again, Canucks don't get scored on the first minute. They'll be fine.
Yeah, they should win. First game home. Yeah, they should win that one as well, for sure.
Saturday, Hockey Night in Canada. Jets come to town. That should be a tough test. I mean, the Jets, 9 points back on the Canucks, but have 3 games in hand. They've been struggling as of late, only won 4 of their last 10, losing to teams like the Flyers and the Penguins. You know, they need to get right. They do have the Sharks on Wednesday, maybe a chance for them to get back in the win column. I mean, they did beat the Penguins, but maybe a chance for a big win and get them back on track. I think this one could just be a goaltending battle.
Yeah. Yeah. Probably the two guys that are in line for battling for the Vezina, the two guys that will battle for to be the Four Nations starter for US for the 2026 Olympic starter. Winnipeg's always a challenging team, Parker. I know we never play. It seems like in general, we never play well against them. We don't match up well against them for whatever reason.
Yeah. It's Hellebuck has always had the Canucks number, but the Canucks are shooting at 13%. So just get a bunch of shots and you'll score a bunch in theory. Yeah. And then Monday, February 19th, next Monday, family day, which I didn't realize it's only a week away. 11 a.m. puck drop against the Wild in Minnesota. So probably like a 2-1 low key go to overtime, 2 shots in overtime.
Yeah.
Very boring hockey game.
Yeah. This in Minnesota, you said, right? Yeah, back in Minnesota. Yes. Okay. All right. So we got 4. Okay. I'll say, yeah, I agree. It's going to be low scoring. I agree. You know, every time we play earlier than 4 p.m. our time, it's not an automatic loss, but it's an automatic extra time game, it seems like.
Yeah. The Canucks don't seem to love the matinees.
Yeah. Man, this seems so. I'm going 2-1-1. I think they'll beat Chicago. I think they'll beat Detroit. I think they could lose to Winnipeg, even though that's Hockey Night Canada at home. And I think they could extra time loss to Minnesota or flip it around Minnesota and Winnipeg. I think it'll be 2-1-1.
I'm going to go 3-0-1. I'm going 7 points of a possible 8. They will kill the Blackhawks. They'll beat the Red Wings. They'll lose to the Jets in OT, and they will beat the Wild.
Love it.
And then quick turnaround. Obviously, we'll be back here next Monday, 10 p.m., and then the Canucks play the Avalanche. They're on a back-to-back. One of their last two back-to-backs, I think, of the season, as they go from Minnesota to Colorado.
And then a whole lot of home games in March.
A lot of home games in March for a team that has been very, very good at home. Yeah. And they should hopefully just go on a run here and start cleaning up.
Yep. Agreed.
All right. 15 minutes to go. Anything else you want to cover before we go to the people?
No, I think that's... Oh, yeah. A question about the Patrick Laine thing, which I just read about now as we were... but that could be part of our questions. That's fine.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, we're at the questions now if you want to go into that.
Okay, I'll start with that one. I know Justin asked about it. I can't find it right now, but basically I didn't know about this until I just was reading about it. I was listening, paying attention to you as well. Apparently a podcast in Columbus was talking, making jokes about Laine taking his leave for player assistance.
Yeah.
Mental health. And I guess they were joking about suicide, which is brutal. I haven't listened to it. And it sounds like
I didn't listen to it. I saw the quote. I mean, yeah, it's one of those things that it's like, how do you even get to that point? I mean, not ideal. And no, Laine even quote tweeted him. Which honestly, I kind of liked. It was like, hey, he actually went out of the way to call him out, which they deserve. Terrible.
Yeah. And then they posted an apology 4 hours ago. Yeah. So, Justin, sorry, I can already comment. I know it's probably going to be really stupid what they said on the podcast, and especially something like that. Like, I applaud these players. We're seeing it more and more, Parker, that more players are entering the player assistance, whether it's mental health, whether it's whatever other issue. You don't want to speculate. You never want to speculate. Mm-hmm. But the fact that there's less stigma, hopefully, around this doesn't help, like this stupid thing that these guys did. But at least the more players are doing it, or at least the NHL is being more open, whatever the reason is. These guys, they're human beings first and hockey players second. So,
yeah. And I saw people like, he's making like $9 million a year. He can just go wipe his tears with his. That's like, that's not how it works, right? Yep. It's just not. It's just silly.
Sure. Duck, the podcast is called B&B Roundtable. B&B Roundtable. If you just on Twitter or on YouTube, if you just search up B&B Roundtable Laine, I'm sure you will find it.
Yeah. Or just don't give them the clicks and and let them fade away into nothing, because it's kind of what's deserved.
Would love to, Parker, address this one. I don't think Jet Wu gets in tomorrow, Wellick. You have to call up a defenseman because you didn't have any extras. So that's you call up Jet Wu. And he's a right-hand shot, remember. So the Canucks already have four righties in there between Hronek, Myers, Juulsen, and Friedman, who are paired together. I don't see Wu getting in over Juulsen for sure, and not even over Mark Friedman. Do you agree with that, Parker?
Yeah, I agree. And the thought about like getting him in for like maintenance for somebody, I mean, I don't think anyone really needs the maintenance except maybe Quinn Hughes, who's playing like 29 minutes a night on these overtime games, and they're not taking him out for Jet Wu. You know, Ian Cole's obviously going to stay in because he's a lefty. So it's like, who are you taking out? Are you taking out Tyler Myers? No, it would be Friedman or Juulsen. Juulsen's been great. Friedman's been fine. I don't think there's any reason to make any moves like that. And it's not like Friedman's been playing a bunch either.
Sure. I've heard a couple of people say is maybe Wu trade bait. You're not showcasing him because there's no body of work there. Like as much as I like the guy, and I was so excited when they drafted him in 2018, right after Quinn Hughes. But there's nothing there yet. So
there's minimal value, right? And are you really slotting him into, like, that's not the priority for this team right now, right? The priority for this team is to win games, secure first place in the West. That's the goal, right? You want to be playing a bad team in the first round, right? That's your ideal scenario,
right?
Every point matters. You're going up against the Blackhawks. That should be a game you take over and dominate. They're not going to take any risks. They're just going to go out there and get the job done. And it's one game until Zadorov comes back, right?
That's
all Jet Wu's here for. Jet Wu is here to be a body. He'll fly to Chicago, or he's already in Chicago by now. And he'll sit in the press box, and then he'll go back to Abbotsford.
Yep. I agree with you completely. You want Phil Kessel?
Why not? I mean, look, I mean, what are you comparing it to at this point, right? PDG's yeah. coming back in the lineup, or he was back in the lineup the other day, and he was fine, honestly. Mm-hmm. Man, Ilya Mikheyev is hurting me right now. Yeah, there is no threat with Ilya Mikheyev on the ice. The speed is not there like it used to be. The shot has nothing on it. Like every single time he'll gain the zone, like you see Hoglander gain the zone, you're like, there's a chance that he just rips a bar down here, right? JT Miller, right? There's a chance he'll do a quick little drive to the net. Elias Pettersson, he's going to curl back and try to find somebody.
Yes.
Mikheyev's going to go in and wrist it into the goalie's glove, and he's going to have no trouble with it, and it's going to have a 3% chance of going in, right? there's no upside here. And I liked the signing when it happened because I didn't think he would, you know, tear his knee up and then not be able to have that speed anymore, right? It's not his fault. It's just an unfortunate scenario.
Yep.
But yeah, like, I mean, would you rather Phil Kessel in lineup over Mikheyev? I mean, he's slower, but Mikheyev's speed isn't game-breaking right now. And maybe there's a little bit more offensive threat potentially.
So Kessel's 36 years old, right?
Something like that.
Sounds right. So you bring him in for a 1.2 pro, or whatever. The Canucks will figure it out. So
bring him in on a PTO at this point.
That's true. That's actually a really good point.
Why not?
Yeah. So you could have a top six of Besser, Miller, PD, Lindholm, Hoglander, and Kessel. And then Mikheyev and Suter get bumped down to bottom six.
Sure. Yeah, look, if Phil Kessel wants to come play for a Stanley Cup contender, and he wants to get into a lineup because no one signed him yet and we're 50 plus games into the season.
Mm-hmm.
If Phil Kessel wants to play, he can sign a PTO. He can go play three games in Abbotsford and light it up if he's really got it still, right?
Yep. Yeah.
There can be a no risk thing for the Canucks where they say, hey, look, you want to do it, right? And we'll give you three games. You perform well, we'll sign you, right?
Yeah.
And again, like worst case, you sign him to a 1-year deal that's done at the end, you know, 2.5 months from now, that contract expires unless, you know, they make it deep in the playoffs, and then you cut bait. That's totally fine. Isn't he close to like 1,000 points too? Like he's like 994, I think, if I remember correctly. He's at 992 career points. So maybe there's like the silver stick you have to pay for. Maybe that comes into the contract discussion a little bit. You know, it's some extra money you got to pay. But no, I mean, like, yeah, it can't hurt at this point, right? Mm-hmm. He's already said that he doesn't care about the Iron Man streak, which is crazy. If you look, he hasn't missed a game in 10 years. If you look at his Hockey DB page, he hasn't missed a game ever. He hasn't missed a game since 2009, 2010. He played 82 games every year, except for 2012, 2013, which was the lockout. 2019-20, which was the COVID season, and then 2020-2021, the bubble season. He's played 82 games every season other than that. And people are like, oh, but maybe, you know, there's a threat of him being scratched and he loses the Iron Man streak. The Iron Man streak's done. That doesn't count if you don't play the first 55 games of the season.
Yeah.
and he's even said, like, you know, I don't care about that. I just want to play. Prove it. Sign an ATO or a PTO and go play in Abbotsford for a little bit. And if you look good and the team thinks you'll be a good black ace for the playoffs, or they think you can slot in every three or four games for a guy like Mikheyev or a Phil DiGiuseppe or whoever, or a Sam Lafferty, you know, maybe it's something the Canucks can do.
Yeah. Great points. Jaden says, when Susie Swift to be back? Well, we know it's not going to be for another 7 days. Placed on injured reserve today. That means the Canucks free. It's weird. And we talked about this last week. They actually just had him on their roster, not on an injured list or anything. Now officially they free up one of those 23 roster spots, but his salary does count against the salary cap. The Canucks aren't worried about that in particular right now. So at least 7 more days, but I heard end of February when they first got injured at the end of January by blocking that shot, at least 4 to 6 weeks? Do you remember hearing anything like that?
Yeah, it's not. I don't think he's around the corner or anything.
Yeah, I agree.
He'll be a little bit of a way out. It was a 6-week expected timeline.
Okay.
And it's been, what, 3, I want to say?
Yeah.
I'm not mistaken?
No, you're right. Yep. Near the end of January.
Yeah. It'll be a few weeks.
Dang. He's good. He's done good this year. He's done really good.
Oh, he's been great.
Yeah.
Yeah, way better than Cole. I like Cole too, but I just want Cole to be better.
Yeah, Cole hasn't been good the last couple of games though. That needs to step up.
Exactly. Exactly. All right, guys, more questions. We got 5 more minutes. Fire them in. Unless you typed it earlier and we missed it.
Yeah, get them in. There's been a lot of like regular messages. Nothing against that. It just makes it hard to find the questions sometimes.
Exactly.
If you have any, get them in. Edmund asks the thoughts on the Chiefs winning the Super Bowl. I already said it. I'm stoked. I don't care about the Chiefs winning. I care about the 49ers losing. Much more so.
Yeah, and I'm not a big enough Seahawks fan to understand. Like, I get that the rivals, I get it's like Edmonton or Calgary winning, I'm not as big as a Seahawks fan to get so mad that I wanted the Niners to lose. I just want to see a good game, and it was. That second half was awesome. It was great.
It was a great football game. Halftime show was good. Little John, Ludacris.
Yeah.
It was great.
Okay, so did you know all those songs?
Most of
I'm not putting
them,
you on the spot. Yeah, that's what I thought. I thought halftime was pretty good. I like the West Coast Rap All-Stars from two years ago a bit better, but this was good too.
Yeah, that one was great.
Usher can skate. I was impressed. He was singing while
he skated. He did try to go through Will.i.am's legs and kind of messed it up.
Yeah, that was not good.
But when he pulled the skates out and looked exactly, I saw tweets comparing him from Ben Stiller's character in Dodgeball, and he looked exactly the same, like the same outfit. It was great.
That is so funny. Fangirl, I'd love to give you a good answer, but it's the definition of draft lottery is we have absolutely no idea. We'll go with whoever has the most odds. How's that?
Probably Chicago. Yeah. Unfortunately.
I think so too. I like this one. Lindholm is a UFA. Rumored that he wants $8 or $9 million. And we haven't heard that from him. That's just the rumor. Hronik is an RFA.
He doesn't deserve. Can I just say that?
Okay. No, for your answer, sure. Hronik in for a big raise. Some say even more than what Hughes makes. And that's not because it's a rip-off. It's rather Hughes is on such a good contract right now and percentage-wise of cap. So what do you think? Either of these guys?
It's a tough one, right? I mean, Lindholm has been good his career, but he's really shown that he excels as a complementary piece, right? He's very good when you put him with really good players, like a Gaudreau or even a Toffoli. Or a Kachuk, right? Kachuk were his line mates, and that was his big year, right? Where he scored 42 goals. Mm-hmm. Last year he had Toffoli, he had 64 points. This year he didn't really have anybody and still did fine, right? 32 points, 49 games, just wasn't, converting in the goals column. However, the NHL is a what have you done for me lately sort of league, as all sports leagues are. He's going to be 30 in the middle of next season. And he really hasn't done much to warrant that big payday, right, in his contract year. As for Filip Hronek, $4.4 million cap hit, he's done the opposite, right? He's been okay his entire career. I mean, 38 points in 60 games last year for Detroit. He's up to 39 and 53 this year, so a little bit of a higher pace. But again, he's playing with Quinn Hughes. And he goes from power play 1 minute on Detroit to power play 2 minutes here and putting up way more points to the point where, I think Lindholm is worth more than the points he's putting up, but less than what he'll probably demand. And I think sort of the same with Hronek, right? He's putting up more points than he would, I think, if he was not on a pairing with one of the best defensemen in hockey.
Right.
And it's a tough thing to balance, right? Like, does Lindholm deserve $8-9 million? I don't think so, right? His best years were centering two of the best players in the NHL. He was a plus 61 that year. Like, that just doesn't make sense. but like this year, he's been just fine, right? He's a 2C. What do 2Cs make? 5.5, 6, maybe. Yep. And I'm in the same boat sort of with Hronek, right? Like, he's going to get paid a lot. But how much of that is just riding the coattails of Quinn Hughes? I mean, he's been good. But he's had some defensive lapses, right? He seems to really struggle to break up passing lanes. Mm-hmm. But he's got a heck of a shot that he hasn't really converted on this year, but he's probably, like I said, injured 17 guys with it. It's a tough balancing act that I think both of them are due to get overpaid.
Right. It's just a matter of which one are you going to overpay. And in terms of team need, you need Filip Hronek. You need
especially with Tyler Myers going. You say whatever you want about Tyler Myers, but he's probably going to be gone after the season. His contract finally expires. So you can't replace a 1 and 2 D on the right side. They're going to pay Hironit. They're going to pay him whatever he wants because they gave up a lot to get him. And you don't get, aside from drafting them and developing them, you rarely get a good first pairing right shot D in a trade. So I think he's going to be here as well. I really do.
Now, Hronik, like you said, is a UFA or is an RFA for one more year.
Correct.
They could, in theory, just give him his qualifying offer, which is a shade under $5.3 million.
Right.
Much more reasonable value. If you think, he does have arbitration rights as well. Mm-hmm. But if he comes out and says, hey, I want $9 million, I mean, the Canucks just can't do that. Like, it's not cost effective. It's not positive value at that point. So they could, in theory, say, hey, we'll give you your qualifying offer and we'll try to move you next year. And maybe they, you know, recoup what they traded for him in the first place, because he probably has higher value than he did than when he was traded for last year. Of course, then you just have more churn essentially in your roster. But this management group has shown that they're not scared of that. They're fine if they got to move a bunch of guys and bring a bunch of new guys in, right? He's like, oh, like Myers will be gone. Yeah, but they're going to sign a guy for $4 million in free agency and he'll do just fine, right? Like they'll make something work. I think that's a route they might have to go here, because.
And does Hironik get mad and play mad all season? Well, that's fine, I guess, right?
Now it's your contract year again, right? Go out and produce. Maybe we're not the ones to pay you $9 million a year, but maybe you can get that somewhere else.
Yeah. Wow. And of course, there's going to be all this drama around Lindholm, around Hironik. Joshua needs a new contract, which I think they'll give him.
Yeah.
And don't forget a little issue, Elias Pettersson. Yeah. It's going to be a fascinating offseason.
Yeah, Pettersson will get a good $5 million raise, maybe $4 million, but still. You got to come up with that money somewhere, right? That's the cap increase right there.
Yep.
Now you have Dakota Joshua, who's going to want $1.5-2 million more than what he currently gets paid.
That's exactly
what you got to account for.
Yeah.
Teddy Bluger's a UFA, right? Do they just want to keep this line together? I mean, he makes just under $2 million. Do they say, hey, we'll give you 2.5? There's another $600K you got to account for, right? Do you try to move off of this Ilya Mikheyev contract? You might have to give something up to do so, but that would clear up $4.75 million. And then you have Tyler Myers coming off the books, but that's a body that's 22 minutes a night you have to replace.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a lot to be done this offseason. You look at the UFAs for this year, right? You have Sam Lafferty, Casey DeSmith, Friedman, Myers, Cole, Phil Products, an RFA, Joshua, Bluger, both UFAs, Lindholm's a UFA. And then RFA side, Pettersson's the big one, obviously, right? But you also have Phil Peronic, like we just mentioned, and then obviously some other names down
there. So basically half of the active roster.
we saw this management group turn over this roster.
Yeah.
Essentially half of it in 1 year. They're going to have to do the same thing.
Yep. Can't wait. Awesome. Amazing. Yeah.
All right. Well, now might be the time to wrap it up. It is 11:03, folks. We'll be back here next Monday, 10 p.m. Make sure you're subscribed, hit the bell, hit like, do all that good stuff. If you enjoyed the show, make sure, like I said, hit the like button. If you missed any part of it, you can rewind back to the beginning. You can find it on your favorite podcast platform in 10 or 15 minutes, whether that's Apple Podcasts, Spotify, etc. It will be there. Just search Canucks After Dark. Clay, any parting words this fine Monday evening?
No, good to be with you, Parker, especially after 4 Canucks games. I think if that's the biggest blip that we're going to suffer is only getting 1 point out of 4 in those back-to-backs between Boston and Detroit, and everything is kind of smooth, not smooth, but will be better from here. I'll take it. The Canucks have built up enough of a cushion where they can have a couple off games, and not that Detroit was off game. So overall, I'm feeling good. I'm liking what I'm seeing. The Canucks should be able to pick up some points, as we've talked about, over the next week until we meet again.
Yeah, and the Canucks still have not had a 3-game losing streak this entire season, which is just ridiculous.
That is pretty impressive.
Folks, that's where we are going to wrap up. We hope you enjoyed. Like we said, we'll be back here next Monday, 10 p.m. to recap the four Canucks games. Anything else that happens with the Canucks, where there's more slap shots and empty nets or whatever happens, we will be here. Have a good rest of your Monday night, and we'll see you next time.